Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, November 4th, 2021. A Sudanese lawyer says the military has violated the country's constitution.
Now that the head of the military has suspended the constitution, he has suspended indirectly any legal reference that the country would refer to fill the current constitutional vacuum.
And three children were killed in an explosion in Jonglei State.
The grenade belonged to the police officer who was sitting with the children. The grenade exploded in his pocket, killing children and injuring others.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A Khartoum-based lawyer says the recent military takeover has created a constitutional vacuum that not only created instability in the short run, but will affect the country for many years to come. The chairman of the Darfur Bar Association says General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who led the military takeover, broke the law by suspending the constitutional declaration and dissolving the transitional government. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Saleh Mahmoud, head of the Darfur Bar Association, says the military's decision to suspend the constitutional declaration and dissolve the cabinet in Sudan is a clear violation of the country's law. He says the military neither has the legal right to suspend the constitution or the power to remove political forces from the country's leadership. Mahmoud says the military takeover could lead to security threats and impact the country's economy.
Now that the head of the military has suspended the constitution, he has suspended indirectly any legal reference that the country would refer to fill the current constitutional vacuum. The move has created a new situation that legally we are unable to move forward.
On October 25th, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, former head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, dissolved the cabinet and suspended articles of the constitutional document. He accused some political parties of excluding the military in taking part in the transitional government. He detained Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok and other civilian members of the government. Hamdok was later released, but other civilian leaders and activists remain in detention. Mahmoud says Sudan is fragile due to decades of conflicts in many parts of the country. He says al-Burhan faces legal challenges which he apparently did not consider before dissolving the transitional government.
It is unfortunate that al-Burhan himself has no solution after opening a door that he is unable to close. He created this vacuum by suspending institutions and some articles within the constitution and is now facing the impact of his action.
Mahmoud says, legally, the Sudanese people now have the upper hand in deciding their fate.
Millions of people will continue to march on the streets and demand the change to this situation through peaceful means. I know the military will insist to use force against the people, and this would worsen the situation, and it will directly affect the lives of the people.
Mahmoud urged Sudan's leaders to seek support from the regional and international partners to resolve the current political crisis.
It's true that some initiatives of the international community are slow, but remains clear that Sudanese people will never allow the return to an authoritarian rule once again.
Al-Burhan has vowed to establish an independent technocratic government and complete the structure of the government before the end of this month. Western leaders have urged Sudan's military leaders to act quickly to restore the civilian-led transitional government. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still in Khartoum, a political analyst says it is significant that two of Sudan's allies, the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, have joined the international community in opposing last week's military takeover. Analyst Hassan Hajjal Analyst Hassan Haj Ali says different mediators may have different ideas of how to restore a civilian government in Sudan, which leaves a room for compromise. Nabil Biagio has details from Washington.
University of Khartoum political science professor Hassan Haj Ali says mediation efforts to resolve the political crisis in Sudan are focusing on reaching common ground for restoring a civilian-led transitional government. The effort includes South Sudan, the United Nations, the African Union, and Western countries.
There are a number of mediation initiatives going on right now. Some of them locally originated, others by the United States and also some mediators from the African Union. But the main focus is how to restore a civilian-led government. But the problem lies in how everybody is defining the civilian component. So the main focus now is how to convince the different parties on this new composition of the government.
Ali says, however, the demands from Sudanese protesters and pro-democracy activists to reverse the October 25 military takeover do not look realistic. The military ousted Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok and his cabinet and jailed many civilian politicians and activists.
So this will take us back again to the October 24th. And this means the military move, the military coup is meaningless. And this will, from my own understanding, from my own observation, the military as an institution will not accept this condition that bringing back the same government on the 24th of October. And so we are going to get into a deadlock because from what I see, it's not easy to bring back the old government. Now we have like a new reality in the country.
On Wednesday, Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates joined the United States and the United Kingdom in calling for the restoration of a civilian-led transitional government. Ali says the joint statement is significant because the two Gulf countries, who are important allies of Sudan, have joined the international community in sharing serious concern with the situation in Sudan. In the statement, the four governments encouraged the release of those detained and lifting the state of emergency. It also said violence has no place in the new Sudan, while encouraging dialogue between all parties. Ali says the statement, however, does not specify how to restore a civilian-led government.
It is a significant development, but also at the same time, there is no mention of restoring the previous government. But they said we need a civilian-led government, but what are the components of this civilian government? Who's going to be the prime minister?
When Sudan's top military general, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, announced the dissolution of Sudan's transitional government, he said a national independent government of technocrats would be appointed to lead the country for the rest of the transitional period. Unconfirmed reports from closed-door negotiations between Burhan and Hamdok, who remains under house arrest, say Hamdok is demanding the release of all civilians arrested in connection with the military takeover before entering any deal with the army. Pro-democracy activists in Sudan have demanded the full restoration of Hamdok's government before any negotiations with the army. Ali says the parties must compromise.
There is a need to emphasize the need for compromise, and I think the ambiguity on the type of civilian government for the Gulf countries is intended to convey to their Western allies that they need a civilian government, but at the same time, they give Burhan and other military leaders the time to either to convince Hamdok himself or to replace him with another civilian leader. I think the starting point is to bring back Hamdok again as a prime minister and then to work out a sort of a new cabinet, how it should be formed, and who should be included, or whether to give Hamdok himself a free hand to form the new cabinet taking into consideration that those should be apolitical, should be only technocrats.
Wednesday's statement is the latest in a chorus of regional and international actors calling for the restoration of civilian rule in Sudan and the completion of Sudan's transition to democracy. That transition began 2 years ago following the ouster of longtime military ruler Omar al-Bashir. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
From Washington, we move to South Sudan, where South Sudan's Civil Aviation Authority says it has suspended the operations of Euroair Flight, the company that was operating the Soviet-made Antonov 26 aircraft that crashed on Tuesday, killing five people on board. The plane crashed shortly after a takeoff from Juba International Airport on its way to Maban County in Upper Nile State. For VOA News, Deng Magot reports from Juba.
The Transport and Roads Minister, Madut Biar Yol, says the company that was operating the ill-fated AN-26 Antonov is suspended until further notice. Yol appealed to the public, especially relatives of the deceased, to remain calm as the government investigates the cause of the crash.
There is still now forming the committee, so we are doing consultation because it is not just a normal committee, but rather it is a technical committee that needs technical, those who are expert in that area of investigation of air crash.
The chief executive officer of South Sudan Civil Aviation Authority, David Subek, says the investigation will determine whether the crash was the result of a mechanical problem or human error. Among the issues being investigated is whether the plane was carrying cargo for the World Food Program.
And we should not go into assumption very much. Because always using the blame is here that overloading, things like that. But it still will get out proper information and really let the general public know. And definitely, if it was the WFP who consigned the yacht, and definitely the family will be compensated through WFP or the owner of the plane. So investigation is still to go on. And we are really sorry for what has happened. But now, as of now, the company itself is grounded, not operating, until we finalize the investigation.
Subek says bodies of the deceased, two South Sudanese nationals, one Sudanese and two Ukrainians, were badly burned in the crash.
There must be a DNA to identify the bodies, who is who, because they are burned beyond the recognition. And then later, definitely the companies will have to do the compensation. But this is a thing that will follow later.
Subek says initial information showed that the plane was carrying 28 barrels of fuel for the WFP. He says the Civil Aviation Authority is still gathering information, including the names of the insurance companies that insured the disease, to determine how the victims will be compensated.
According to our manifest, we were told or have seen that the cargo belongs to WFP. So I have even summoned the WFP now. I'm waiting for them to come to confirm to me whether the cargo is theirs or not.
Brigadier General Kur Kwol Ajeo, the director of the airport and the manager of Juba International Airport, reminds aviation workers to always ensure planes are in good condition before takeoff.
These people now, they have an engineer, they have a co-pilot and all that things. So it is the work of engineering the aircrafts. If you see something which is unusual, which is not correct, definitely he will say this one and all that. And he will try to fix it. If he is unable to fix it, he will recommend so that to be fared out for a better maintenance. So it is their job. They know when they fly, they check. Whether the plane is perfect to fly or not.
The plane belonged to Optimum Aviation Limited but was being operated by Euroair Flight Company. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, three children were killed in an explosion in Jonglei State. Find out more after this break.
What do you think? people speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you start a conversation on a sensitive topic or issue?
First of all, you need to know the context, and you need to know what you are going to talk about and why they have brought it in that particular time. Okay. And from there, you make maybe after the introduction, you build the main body and you conclude.
You first need to put out the key things which you want to talk about, which can even capture the interest of the people. Because if you start with something which people doesn't have interest in, they will not give you time to give out what you want to tell them.
You have to know about the issue, and you have to know how to approach the issue. You have to even know how to tackle the issue, and you even have to study on how to speak on the issue to avoid conflict.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Authorities in Ayot County in South Sudan's Jonglei State say three children died and seven other people were injured after a grenade accidentally exploded. Police say they are investigating. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
James Chuol Jack, the Ayot County Commissioner, confirms that at least three children were killed, while seven people, including a police officer, were injured in the blast in Wau Payam of Ayot County yesterday.
The grenade belonged to the police officer who was sitting with the children. The grenade exploded in his pocket, killing children and injuring others.
Jack says the police officer's leg was wounded in the explosion. Jack says security agents in the area are investigating why the grenade exploded. Jack says he is coordinating with the people in the area to ensure the wounded are evacuated either to Bor or Juba for better medical care. He urges parents to always remain vigilant and caution their children against playing with unknown objects that could be explosive.
Grenade are banned in South Sudan, and why this officer was carrying it in his pocket is what we need to find out. The parent should be careful with any object that can explode. That is my advice.
Major General Joseph Mayana Kon, the Jonglei State Police Commissioner, says police have not arrested anyone in the case so far. Akon says investigations are trying to determine who owned the grenade.
I was just informed that three people were killed because of explosion of the grenade, the hand grenade. And then also there were some injured. Okay. So I will still call them.
Okay.
I will still call them to know exactly the reason why the hand grenade exploded.
There have been other grenade explosions across South Sudan in recent months. A 13-year-old boy was killed and his two sisters injured after a grenade explosion in northern Bahr el-Ghazal state in February. In March, two people died after a man threw a grenade into a bust parking area in Rumbek town of Lagos state. According to the United Nations Mine Action Service, more than 5,000 South Sudanese, including 249 children, have been killed or injured by landmines and exploded ordnance since 2004. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
The National Security Service has apprehended 14 suspected criminals in South Sudan's capital, Juba, who are involved in printing millions of fake US dollars and thousands of South Sudanese pounds. Four vehicles believed to be stolen were also recovered in the operation by the National Security Service. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
National Security Service spokesperson David John Kumuri says the suspects, who include two foreigners, were arrested following a joint operation by various security agencies. Kumuri says the suspects also had four vehicles, six motorbikes, and three rickshaws, all believed to be stolen property. He told the reporters the four vehicles include a Toyota Noah and two Toyota Primos. Kumuri advised citizens who had their vehicles or rickshaw stolen to file legal complaints and follow up with the National Security Service.
The arrest ensued as a result of fast surveillance and counter-operation that was launched by the Operation Division Surveillance Team. We have a surveillance team of the operation. And the team managed to apprehend an amount of 88 million United States dollars, black US dollars, and also 5,071,000 United States dollars incomplete. And also we have 400 notes of South Sudanese pound, as well as also we have some chemicals here producing powders and ingredients.
Kumuri says a second sting operation yielded the recovery of the lost vehicles and the motorbikes. He says the 14 arrested suspects include one man from Liberia and another from Guinea-Bissau. He says some of the counterfeit money has already traded hands in the market. Kumuri says the suspects were planning to inject more fake dollars and South Sudanese pounds into the marketplace.
Today's press statement highlights the extensive efforts that organized criminal groups were engaged into perpetrate a scheme that targets South Sudanese economy of the country and their hard-earned assets. And we urge the citizens to be aware of this sophisticated financial scheme to protect themselves or their businesses from becoming victims.
Kumuri says the suspects also had stolen a number of uniforms from different security units, including the South Sudan National Police Service, Department of the Tiger Division, also known as Republican Guards, as well as uniforms of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. He says security agents also recovered several magazines of bullets. Under South Sudan's Penal Code, Sections 153 and 158, counterfeiting notes or coins and possessing of instruments or material for purposes of using the same for counterfeiting coins or notes are national security crimes. Both are punishable by up to 7 years in prison and substantial fines. One suspect who was allowed to briefly speak to reporters identified himself only as a 50-year-old named Nyika from Liberia. He says he came to South Sudan in 2010 and admitted being involved in counterfeiting money for years. He says he was first arrested and released in 2014 on similar charges.
Because I needed money, I said, yes, I can give them assistance because I need money. You understand? I cannot be hungry. Then somebody asked me that you have chemical or you have a means of helping us to wash this fake dollar. Then I said no. But because I need money, I'm suffering, is the reason I said yes. But those things, they are not belonging to me.
Kumuri says the National Security Service is on the lookout for more suspects who may be involved in the counterfeiting scheme. He advised the public to be aware of such criminal activities. In January, the National Security Service arrested two people suspected of printing counterfeit money in Juba. They were apprehended while in possession of $2 million fake dollars and a printing machine. If found guilty, they could be sent to prison for up to 7 years. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The United States is ratcheting up pressure on the Ethiopian government as the conflict in Ethiopia begins its second year. President Joe Biden on Tuesday said he has decided to cut Ethiopia out of a U.S. trade program, setting the path for further sanctions against the African nation over the war in Tigray's region. VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashenawi has more.
In a letter to Congress, U.S. President Joe Biden said Ethiopia has not met requirements to remain a beneficiary of the African Growth and Opportunity Act. The program provides sub-Saharan African nations duty-free access to the United States if they meet certain requirements, including making progress toward political pluralism. The action goes into effect on January 1st. The president said Ethiopia has committed gross violations of internationally recognized human rights. Biden's announcement came just before the first anniversary of the war's beginning. The U.S. Special Envoy to the Horn of Africa, Jeffrey Feltman, said Tuesday that Ethiopian officials were warned in June that their country's relations with the United States were at a crossroads. That crossroads, he said, are behind us. Feltman said the parties to the conflict in Ethiopia do not seem anywhere near a ceasefire or talks and called the humanitarian conditions in Tigray unacceptable. He was speaking at an event at the U.S. Institute of Peace in Washington. The envoy said the Biden administration called for Ethiopian authorities and the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front, the TPLF, to take urgent steps to end the conflict, enable humanitarian access, and protect civilians.
The administration has consistently sought to engage the government of Ethiopia and encourage a different path. As true partners should, we've tried to be candid in sharing our best advice, namely that this military conflict, if it continues, will have disastrous consequences for Ethiopia's unity, territorial integrity, and stability, and also for Ethiopia's relations with the United States and the international community.
The war began on November 4, 2020, when Ethiopian federal troops attacked TPLF locations. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said they were responding to TPLF attacks on federal military bases. After quickly capturing the Tigray capital, Mekelle, the Ethiopian forces became bogged down fighting the resistance, and in the past 2 months, TPLF troops have advanced into neighboring regions. Thousands of civilians have died in the conflict and tens of thousands displaced. Ethiopia's government on Tuesday declared a state of emergency as TPLF troops threatened to move on the capital. The United States has warned that the Tigray forces, who long dominated the national government before Abiy Ahmed took office, against any attempt to besiege Addis Ababa after seizing control in recent days of the strategic cities of Desai and Kombucha. The U.S. State Department has warned Americans not to travel to Ethiopia or to leave the country if they are there because of the escalating conflict. The U.S. and United Nations have accused Ethiopian authorities of preventing passage of trucks carrying food and other aid into Tigray. The Addis Ababa government, however, says Tigray forces are blocking access, stealing aid, and not letting trucks return from Tigray to get more supplies. Feltman said the U.S. is alarmed by the worsening situation, referring not only to the blockade on aid to Tigray, but also the Tigray forces' push into the neighboring Amhara and Afar regions, widening the humanitarian crisis.
That expansion of the war, however, is as predictable as it is unacceptable, given that the Ethiopian government began cutting off humanitarian relief and commercial access to Tigray in June, which continues to this day despite horrifying conditions of reported widespread famine and near-famine conditions that have shocked the world. In Tigray, 90% of the population requires aid, and up to 900,000 people are facing famine-like conditions.
Feltman said, "No government can tolerate an armed insurgency, but no government should engage in mass starvation against its own citizens." The U.S. Special Envoy is set to arrive in Ethiopia Thursday to attempt to de-escalate a civil conflict. His visit comes shortly after the government urged residents of Addis Ababa to arm themselves against advancing TPLF troops. Mohammed El-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Shikilmanga by General Paulino. We have been listening to General Paulino with the song Shikilmanga. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Lisa, Lisa, Pisanula, the good morning to you. Kalam Tobo, you look careful, what do you do? Kalam Tobo, you look careful, what do you do?